The klezmer scene now is such a different world because it is without the old guys as a, and there's only really one or two musicians left who were from that era. Pete is still, God bless him, he should be venerated every day. People should, without Pete Sokolow, this whole klezmer revival would have been a weekend event. It wouldn't have lasted. Pete introduced everyone to, I mean, he introduced us to the Epsteins and to Sid Beckerman and to Ray Musiker and to Howie Leese and to, I mean, it was just unbelievable what Pete did. And I dubbed him, his favorite nickname, I dubbed him the youngest of the old guys. He did not want to be the head of the parade. He wanted to be at the end of the parade. He wanted to be the guy who followed Pete's real character, the W.C. Fields of Yiddish music, a cantankerous, demanding, brilliant, knows everything. But the values, the world, the sonic universe that Pete came out of no longer has resonance with the young players now. He came of age, understanding the harmonic knowledge of the big bands, of bebop.
Those are his changes.
Those are his changes, and that's how he hears this stuff. Now you have a whole generation that's not their frame of reference anymore. So the klezmer universe has changed to reflect the literacy and the intention of a younger generation. And there are still great players. I think probably the most accomplished clarinetist playing today is Michael Winograd. What's great about him is that he is the first generation since the passing of people like Sam Musiker, Ray's brother, the brains behind the Taunts record. The Musikers were the last generation who had an equal affinity for both Yiddish music and jazz. It took several generations to get to having a new generation of musicians who also play the two genres with equal ability. And that's exciting because that leads to some liberated thought. And there are people like Cookie Siegelstein, perhaps the greatest fiddle player playing this music today.
But it's not just the age of people, it's also these people's connections to the old country are radically different from yours and much less personal.
The number of people in the klezmer scene today who are children of Holocaust survivors, I think you can count them on the fingers of one hand. Most of the people who play klezmer music came to it with their own familial discontinuity. Whatever they learned had to be internalized artificially. It's not anything they grew up with. It's not anything they had a literate understanding of. So considering that, there is a profound amount of curiosity of the people who are playing the music now. Being a generation or two separated from the Eastern European-born audiences and players of this music puts anyone who plays the music now at a serious disadvantage, because without the language, the music cadences very similarly to the language. So without having an everyday access to the culture and its own rhythms, the music ends up sounding, it's a unique sound. It's not the old sound. And the idea of wanting to recreate the old sound, it's not an easy task. I'm thrilled that there are people who have taken that on. Of all of the things that to me is most puzzling, you know, there's a big, big interest in playing klezmer music and in Yiddish songs and all this thing. But the thing for which there is no great interest is traditional cantorial music. It is so devoid, the sound of cantorial that is taught now, as heard in synagogues across the country, is so devoid of any of the nuances or any of the tonalities that the music is from. It strikes me as freakish in a way, because klezmer music is derived, its modal structures is derived from the influence of the synagogue. While there are new generation of young Hasidim, this is one of the great organic revivals that in the Hasidic world, usually the Hasidim were very passionate about taking non-Jewish forms of music and introducing them into Hasidic life. Why? Because the idea of making something which had a profane context and making it holy is far greater than making something unique and new that didn't exist before. So the idea that there are young Hasidim now who have taken to playing old-style klezmer music and singing old-style chazonis is one of the most thrilling moments, because here are people who are in the soundscape. They are deep in the soundscape, and they are deep in the handing off of this culture from generation to generation. They are a powerhouse. They're a massive powerhouse of literacy and insight. That's a real amazing world to look to.
I thought you were going to be older. Actually, I thought you were going to be, no, I mean, I had a preconceived idea that you were going to be Jonathan's mom's age, like 87 or something. And then on the way, Jonathan said, oh yeah, he's my brother Murray's age. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. So you were super, super young when you were doing all of this. What was the reaction from the older people? Were they excited or, sorry?
No, my fault.
No. What was their reaction to you?
Being so young.
Well, I think that was on. Here was the social dynamic at that time, late 60s, early 70s, when I think the rise of ethnic studies. Stuff like Roots, the Alex Haley book, that for the first time offered a perspective from the bottom up rather than from the top down. So the idea that ethnic minority studies would be of interest. This was also the time where Israel was at really the whole thing of Zionism, cultural Zionism, and social Zionism. Using up the available oxygen in the Jewish world, that it became the standard by which you were judged as a resilient and an identifying Jew, and the idea of breaking away from that and looking to one's own history rather than a top-down history as Israel and contemporary Zionism were doing. So suddenly, Jews for whom Yiddish was meaningful, who had been used to being in the half-light, who had been used to being overlooked and bypassed, and who had been really gotten used to not referencing their own life, suddenly heard something that referenced them, that allowed them, and it was fabulous to be one of the flagship ensembles that would play this stuff for an older audience. And invariably, what would happen is people would say, "Oh, it's wonderful, but you know, that's not klezmer music." In Pechukov, where I came from, this is what a klezmer band sounded like. So everyone knew better than me, and they were all right. By the way, they were. So I think and this was one of the beautiful things about Klez Camp in the beginning, because I went out of my way to make sure that a lot of people who were Eastern European born, who grew up with this stuff, knew about this and made it easy for them to come to, so that even if these people were not actively teaching, even if they weren't actively playing an instrument or running a class, just being there and just hearing the thrum of their conversations throughout the hotel, you were in this shtetl. You were in this soundscape. It was this Yiddish kind of brigadoon. And the old people really appreciated, because they thought that even among the people who loved it the most, they thought this music and the culture were gone forever. History does not give you a second act a lot of times. And here, no one was used to the fact that music revivals were That's a pretty recent phenomenon of people who actively go back and attempt to rejuvenate a form of music that is no longer, you know, active. So it was an incredible moment to be able to give this back, the dignity, to a lot of the people who grew up with this stuff.
I want to thank you so much for spending an hour with us. This is like the nicest thing ever.
You are to be really congratulated. You made this pilgrimage. What was the drive? 4 hours?
Close to five.
Oh, my God. But who's? But I mean, you. This is really old school. I am very impressed that you came and did this. And thank you for asking me. Really exciting. Can't wait to hear how the work came out.
We'll try and do right by you.